Good afternoon and welcome to a home run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are here until the hour of six as always. The time is 22 minutes left to the hour of five. And as always, we have another topic for you that is, well, it wouldn't be Helmed and Dwight, and it would definitely not be home run without the depressing part of the subject. But that's just what you get for facing, a reality. Anyone that tells you to prove that the statement "the truth shall set you free" is wrong, just give them directions to the Eagle FM studio here in Windhoek. It's in Klein Windhoek, John Ludwig Street, 33B. Now, well, just direct them here at any time from 4:30 to 6, and basically give them and also give them direction to social media, and tell them to subscribe to the e-villager by sending the word subscribe via WhatsApp to 0812004144, 0812004144. Now, then they can just find out that anyone that choose to talk about the reality on the ground on a daily basis have just a way of, being, call it a party pooper. Now, that's basically one of those topics that we have for you. For those of you that saw our poster, if it's not done, I'll have to go to IT for the millionth time and commit murder. I have not committed murder, which is why I'm still here. So just don't take it in a literal sense. Now, that's because when you look at ownership, today's home run is going to sound, I actually touched a few parts of more like, a few parts of it in the morning show, but in the morning we did talk about more like we don't know what we want as Africans. We clearly don't know what we want. That's why there's a contradiction between what we want versus what we are doing. What we want is for anyone not to interfere in our fear, in our affairs. But then again, what we do is, what we do is the opposite of that. What we do is basically, makes the environment rife. Okay, un momento, s'il vous plaît.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ouli mnangeshefa nohara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa kono raheta tu natu, bali o heta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 17 minutes left to the hour of five, and as always, your drive time show, your drive time buddies are here, and that's Helmed and Dwight to keep you company on that Monday road. That Monday, it's only one of those days that not a lot of people like.
I think, you know, someone should go and tell the International Calendar Formulation Association somewhere in the world to not have a payday or the end of the month that takes place on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Because immediately on the Mondays, you get literally the snail express going everywhere else. From driving, I mean, I'm driving just here to the studio as well is also in its own right. I know I might be sounding like I'm, you know, sort of like venting a little bit. But it's as if everyone has forgotten their lives over the weekend and they forgot to bring the life with, you know, I'm talking about energy wise on the Monday. So now all you are left with is literally the Slowpoke Federation and the Snail Express operating everywhere. Don't worry, guys. Don't worry. But anyway, welcoming you, changing my demeanor a little bit, welcoming you guys specifically to our Monday session.
Yeah.
Our drive time session where you obviously will be listening to us in your company. That'll be obviously from 4:30 up until 6.
Yeah.
Are you looking at the calendar, Helmut?
No, I'm, you know, I looked at the calendar so that I can, you know, advise our listeners accordingly, not only to drive safe, but also to spend safely because today is just the second. We still have 3 weeks.
Hey.
Actually four. We just started this one.
Yeah. The nightmare starts from the 1 July.
Oh yeah, that.
Because July and August are 2 months that each have 31 days each. So you sit there's potentially that you will have a 5 week nightmare. Oh my goodness. It is July. Yeah. So it's always the 5 week nightmare that I try to avoid, but
then there's July.
Yeah.
And then there's July and then there's August.
August, yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh dear Lord.
Yeah. Well, obviously for those of you that, enjoy your winters.
Well, this is exactly, don't over enjoy because baby milk formula. No, but for those of you, look,
but that'll be for next March and February
and forevermore.
Well, I haven't heard of babies that last as babies forevermore. They become kids as they grow, you know.
Yeah. The more expensive they become.
Yeah. So consequences and repercussions 9 months later.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It's a delayed or what is that word they use in accounting? Deferred impact.
But whoever came up with the with the term bundle of joy, that one was a genius. Bundle of joy, that, you know.
It's a Monday, Helmut.
How is that possible? I thought we were careful. No, you were not. But
I actually watched the movie that had those lines in it. I don't want to go any further. I really don't want to.
Oh no, those are my favorite topics in the morning. How'd that happen? Seriously, dude? That's your first question?
One of them was cling. What was it? Cling wrap was used, and then they've got their fourth kid.
Jeez.
Well, anyway.
Growing up is a scam, guys. Don't fall for it. It's a trap.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something, you know, let's talk about a subject that is somewhat going to bring us to something that I always like to say, that why does it seem to be that everyone knows what everyone has a plan for Africa except Africa. And today's topic is going to be based on two main sources. The first one being, you know, the third AU-EU ministerial meeting that took place in Brussels. That was, in Brussels, Belgium. And, you know, just a sort of like a gloss through or more like a peripheral source that is, that we're going to be using, is that of the International Security Conference on Africa. And this is a fairly new institution from the, turns out. The conference they had in Kigali was an inaugural one. It was their first.
Yeah.
Now, the AU-EU partnership, on the other hand, this year turned 25. Yeah, this year, 2025, the first, you know, AU-EU partnership sort of like a joined, you know, a joined way of doing things for two blocks is, you know, started, you know, the first one was held in Cairo, Egypt in, in 2000. The first one was held in Cairo, Egypt in 2000.
Yeah, that's number one of these meetings. These meetings, Samut. It's not the summits yet. It's the meetings.
Cairo, Egypt.
2000.
2000.
Yes. I hear you. 25 years ago. Literally 25 years ago. But before your astonishment, there were other things happening in between.
No, my astonishment is not coming from the fact that, this is the third one that they are having. I'm just saying, the EU and the AU have been in partnership since 2000.
Well, Helmut, that is a little bit of a underscoring subject matter known as the Berlin Conference of 1884, right?
Oh, dear Lord. And now,
so for you to say, the names change.
The names change.
The geographies are obviously the ones that are intertwined for so long.
When you look at the two organizations, like something that I did not actually look at, the difference between, basically Africa, the African Union and a lot of other blocks is that the EU is more into, I think in comparison to other blocks like the AU, prioritizes, economics more. Mm. Like trading is a top priority for them in comparison to us. Which again, when you look at it from that angle, and thank you so much for pointing that out, that a lot of African organizations are mostly political.
Yeah.
By design. And if you look at the AU, at the EU, for example, it's more like, what are we trading?
Yeah.
What is our mutual economic benefits from the, what's mutual economic benefits that's going to come from this relationship? And then when you look at it like that, it also points to one very painful, full reality that you and I have been pointing. Politics does not generate revenue.
No, it doesn't. Unless
trade does.
Yeah, but unless you are Namibia. And this is obviously where I like, you know, rubbing our ego. Yes, the listeners. I'm talking about us Namibians as a collective because for once, not for once, I've also been impressed many times by the public sector administrative capacity in terms of formulating a good plan. I mean, Helmut, at least it's not the kinds of, you know, comedy shows that you see, for example, like what the Uganda one that we referenced back in last week. Apologizing for mistakes at a religious ceremony.
Yep.
That was
not in parliament. That was interesting.
At a religious ceremony that was
headed by the daughter.
Yes, headed by the daughter of the same state leader and his wife, the first lady,
and the minister of education and culture.
What? She is also the minister.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you said. And then their son is the chief of the army who wants to try. While the parents are apologizing one side, the son wants to bring in a authoritarian kind of way of processing supposedly, let's just say people that committed crimes, even though the Supreme Court of the country said that is unconstitutional what he wants to suggest, but he wants the military court system where he has a say. Remember, they have a say. The military court system does not follow a constitution of a country.
Civil proceedings, no, they don't. Also, one thing you have to look at is, here's one thing that Jeffrey Sachs pointed out when it comes to Donald Trump's tariffs. I think it was two things.
Yeah.
That Donald Trump has, had to use only the executive branch without consulting, Congress to bulldoze through into implementation. Now, that's because
it's on the tariffs, right?
Yeah. and the tariffs.
It's not the one on immigration. Because it's literally similar.
Yeah, the immigration one. Because they're both similar. The deportation part. Yeah, they both have one thing in common. The U.S. Constitution makes provision for, provision for the implementation of things like tariff.
Yeah.
If it is first declared an emergency.
But what was the thing? Remember what was the development? First, what was the court that said it is unconstitutional? Uh-huh. Then they took it to an appeals court, because in the US they have something known as an appeals court. The appeals court then rules in favor of the tariffs being implemented.
Uh-huh.
And then the next process, supposedly, it bounces back to another court, a higher court. There's a higher court above the Supreme Court, which ultimately will also once again reverse the appeals court decision, which voted yay, because the Supreme Court said nay. And then once again, supposedly that other court will say, but it's unconstitutional. Remember,
they're basically playing hot potato here.
But yeah, but in the instances of the two, so sorry for this, Almut.
Yeah.
The tariffs one was brought on by small business leaders. The immigration one was brought on by judges of the various state level courts.
Mm-hmm.
The judges brought that one.
The deportation.
Yeah, the deportation discussion. The judges. Now, if your judges turn against you as a national leader, and you are right, Almut.
Now,
if Trump doesn't like what you're doing here, his whole team tries to attack you on the other end.
Yeah, they can find a workaround.
Yeah.
And that's where military courts are a bad idea, because it's very easy to trial someone without the trial taking place. Let me explain. In the name of during the 2013 Edwards Snowden files.
Yeah.
One thing that was made clear was that the intelligence community have been doing a lot of illegal things, including spying on their own people in the name of national security.
And the thing was, they literally have a clause in the Constitution that says those intelligence agencies may not spy and surveil U.S. citizens within the country.
Yeah, they just really worked around that one. Now, here's the thing. That's also something that Andrew Feinstein points out in his book and documentary of the same name, Shadow World, Global Arms Deal. That a lot of illegal arms trade happens under the cloak of it's classified.
Mm.
This is classified for national security. Mm. So, in other words, if you get to the point of prosecuting civilians in a military court, you can just, prevent the media from attending the case because this is something that, pertains, national security, and it's only a handful of people that are going to be there, and those are all your homies.
Mm.
It leaves a lot of room for separation of political opponents.
Mm.
Like a lot of
rules. And separation of freedom of expression.
Yep.
Freedom of movement as well. And as well as also freedom of, what's the other one's name? Freedom of privacy. The right to privacy.
Out through the window.
Yeah. All of that is thrown out of the window. But yeah, which actually shows that we're actually digressing, Hamid, because we obviously started off on an African thing.
African. The problem is, that's actually how, public anger is generated. Mm. Remember what happened, remember what happened in Bangladesh?
Mm.
The court ruled that, let's just open a lot of positions for everyone to apply. Not only relatives of those that fought in the liberation of the country.
And that was but 17%. That was less than 30% of the jobs.
Yeah.
In the public sector.
Yeah. The court tried to open up door for basically all citizens to apply.
Yeah.
And then, the prime minister was like, you know what? Actually, that's not going forward. Did they reverse that decision coming out of the court? And people were like, okay, fine. We are coming to the White House. To the State House to eat your chicken. Don't worry, Natumbo. We're not coming there yet.
Now, you said that alone, Elmer. You're not the one that meets the chief of protocol accidentally at State House events.
Oh, no. That's why I get to say, because I'm just,
yeah.
You're on the other hand that keeps running. So it's you. someone was able to recognize you at the airport. Was that guy having a fake ticket or something?
He recognized me the other day here, opposite, close to the work.
Uh-oh.
I went to the service station here around the corner.
Uh-huh.
And as I'm standing there to cross over to get to my car because I bought something, he pulls up and he literally calls me by my name. And I look at the guy, I was like, oh, it's the guy that greeted me on the airport strip. Literally on the runway.
Franz and I went shopping for lunch.
Yeah.
Everything was fine until Franz started talking. Then the guy next to, the guy next to us was also shopping for his cool drink. He was like, oh. Franz and Engel was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it becomes awkward, believe you me. But yeah. We've got to get back to EU, AU.
African Union after the break. Dependency is actually one, is going to, more like, I don't want to call it dependency because it has some, a lot of negative connotation to it. I want to call it, I want to use the word more like, how can we contribute more to this, to these partnerships? But before we continue, we're going to take a commercial break, and this discussion will be continued on the other side, coming out of Brussels AU-EU meeting.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners. Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 5. Where were we? AU-EU summit, a third of its kind. And, Namibia was there. And they had a very nice desk.
Oh, no. Let me give the... let's introduce that. So, guys, in preparation today for our discussion for today, literally as I'm busy typing up the script after doing all the literature research and all that, The communications officer of the EU, High Commission here in Namibia, literally drops this whole explainer with photos about our Minister of International Relations and Trade. Oh, and I got a response, Helmut, from the Minister of International Relations and Trade.
Mm-hmm.
The response is, maybe we posted it on our social media.
Maybe.
Inverted commas, in quotation marks. Maybe we posted it there. I went back as far as possible to try and understand where did they communicate. Probably Namibia was going to be part of this AU delegation to this, to in Brussels. And they went to Brussels.
Yeah.
They went to headquarters in Europe. Now, as we obviously, discern from that conundrum there, because if you Namibians were going to ask, so what is this AU-EU discussion besides our direct or umbrella participation in the AU discussion? It's because literally our Minister of International Relations was there. Minister Jenny Matundu. She was there.
Yeah. I think a media label, I was like,
and
that
I'm
is
asking,
awesome.
And I'm asking the PROs of the ministry, so did you guys say or did you guys know that your minister was there? Did anyone say anything? Yeah, maybe we posted it on our socials. But anyway, obviously, you know, moving away from that development. I now throw the next particular sort of like, not that I want to say nuclear bomb, because it seems like the world is on the verge of going to war. What I mean by that is that the UK has announced Helmut, a draft, military drafting. Our discussion last week of non-proliferation seems like no one cares.
Here's one problem about, again, you know, I mean, I said this last week, I'm going to say it again. Mm. Dwight, wars are expensive.
No, they are.
Politicians don't have money to fight any war.
Oh, yes, they do.
Politicians?
No, not their bank accounts.
Uh-huh.
When you look at the
taxpayers,
the government accounting that they rely on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that, I know that's a very, you know, that's a very, you know, the oldest way to privatize public money.
Mm.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, to some degree money laundering.
Mm.
But now, one thing, conscription.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing.
Look, Germany already has it. Russia has it in like a, you know, like a loose format. However, now that the UK is announced today, even that's a nightmare, Helmut.
Here's one. Okay, here's one pattern that you see in every empire. Every time an empire falls, wars most likely breaks out.
Yeah, but who is the empire that we're looking at? Which is obviously also one of the particular discussions in this talk that we're having.
Okay, if you look at this, there is no war taking place, not on a global level. Now, if those conscriptions are most likely to be used, they are most likely going to be against the EU, or just take the EU out of it, NATO, against Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we know that economically speaking, the best enemy here is China.
But remember, the rhetoric coming through from the Trump administration is that the European partners have to do more.
Yeah, for their own security. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to look at two potential future conflicts. It's the US with China. That is the greatest fear that people don't understand here. Everyone, we all see the direct, what you call it, sort of like the direct name calling and threats here in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump and his administration, meaning the, you know, the loose head, the headless chickens that he has as his advisors and stuff. Yeah, they are headless chickens because they still don't understand what tariffs are. Those guys are the ones that are hurling insults at China.
Yeah.
They're the ones, calling even the Chinese citizens peasants and all those kinds of things. They're the ones who are trying to inflict some sort of economic harm to China.
And they want to employ, you know, Europe in that military adventure. Okay, now that's an interesting.
Do you think Europe can fight two fights?
No.
It has been proven in history. Twice. Ask Napoleon and ask the failed Austrian painter. At least in Napoleon's scenario, Napoleon did win fights against credible adversaries and credible peers. I mean, he came up against, what is the famous Russian general? Kutuzov. He came up against Kutuzov. He came up against the famous generals of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
What was the guy's name? The guy that's also a philosopher. He came up against famous Prussian generals. If anyone knows in military science and in military whatever, that art itself, you would have heard of, what was the guy's name?
And all this case was done by a dude wearing leggings?
It wasn't leggings. Leggings was Henry VIII Tochman, Helmut. The guy who was a serial killer through serial marriage.
Yeah. Marriage then.
That guy's worse than an African. at least we know you have one wife there with kids and one wife there with that guy.
No, forget that. At least we know there's this thing called divorce.
Yeah.
But
anyway, yeah. So
too much information.
Yeah.
But, coming out of the, preliminary monitoring report considered by the EU Ministerial Follow-Up Committee, assessment of the implementation of, joint vision for 2030 in view of completion and adaptation for the next summit. Now.
And that summit is taking place this year, ne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Now, just skip, you know, there's something on the introduction that you know, but that I found with all the military, preparations taking place in Europe. Now, one way of looking at this is just, they seem to be a divorce in military protection assurances between EU member states, aka NATO member states, because the big boy on the block there has been the US.
Mm.
Now, the guy in the White House right now is not a very huge fan of how, some EU member states have been known, at least according to the guy, for not paying their dues into paying for that said security.
Do you know what it actually was?
Uh-huh.
All those European countries, Helmut, have, it's like an internal control mechanism that says they may not spend more than 3% of national budget, of the country's budget,
mm-hmm.
on the military.
Because every time they do that, they always find themselves.
Exactly. The First World War, the Second World War. You can even go back to Napoleon. And even before that, Frederick the Great.
So the best way to control their military, their military growth, and therefore, subsequent a rise in dictatorship, is to control how much they spend on the military.
Exactly.
And that's interesting. Now, because of from the look of things, it seems though. As we speak, that line have been removed. You cannot go ahead. There's one guy that made a video. I think it's German.
Mm.
Made a video of of other European countries telling German, from now moving forward, you can just restock your army and get as much arms as you want. And the guy was like, "Are you sure? Okay, that's well. Maybe third time is a charm." I'm like, okay, that doesn't sound good.
No, it really doesn't.
Now, of all the goals that we are setting is a country without, according to the last week's, nuclear non-proliferation discussion.
Mm.
Non-proliferation, but it seems that multiple slip of the tongue may have been, up to something.
Mm.
Yeah. So one thing that you have here is that, we are saying we don't want wars. But if you look at our actions, we are actually preparing for war. And the EU, not we as Namibia, we as basically the entire globe.
Mm.
Now, according to the document coming out of, one of the documents coming out of the, coming out of that meeting of the AU-EU, a prosperous and sustainable Africa and Europe.
No, go down to the next two points after that one. The one for renewed and enhanced cooperation on peace, security, and governance.
And you do that.
Because the headache here, Helmut, besides that point that you have there,
yeah.
The headache here is our listeners should understand the fear that you and I are sharing here.
Mm.
Because things are happening in Europe that could literally end all humanity in life. Firstly, end humanity. And end all life because of a whole bunch of them.
Don't say it like that, dude. You're scaring Christians that are waiting until marriage.
I know. But the Christians have to know that mm-hmm. our discussion of Friday, the non-proliferation discussion,
mm-hmm.
ties directly into this thing. So why would you have a bunch of diplomats saying something at that non-proliferation?
Yeah.
You get here to this discussion of today, one that we're having now.
Yeah.
Based upon AU-EU. But the European guys are busy antagonizing a nuclear power on the one side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only nuclear power between them is France and
the UK.
The other countries just have civilian nuclear use and power stations.
Nuclear umbrella.
Yeah.
That's in a country where the guy now doesn't really like them.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
And then the other side is you've got Donald Trump trying to antagonize China. And both of them are nuclear powers.
Uh-huh.
At the start of May, you had India and Pakistan almost going to full-scale war, who both have nuclear warheads. Helmut, this is so volatile. I mean, the volatility is on. So start looking for a new planet to live on, guys. That's all I can say.
I don't think we stand a chance on that one.
The AU definitely.
Now, I know, you know one funny thing I like about rich people? They like to, you know, build bunkers, and we watch a bunch of movies and think, you know, in the event of a nuclear apocalypse or whatever alien invasion, this is what I would do. You know what I want if there is an event of any apocalypse? I want to die. Because if you survive, the fight for resources is going to be savage.
Yes.
Like, literally Hunger Games times, I don't know how many.
No, it's Hunger Games, Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
The whole Fallout game. The whole Fallout game. Or the games, because there have been multiple titles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even Borderlands, even that game, everything is about post-apocalyptic nightmares and, yeah.
Nightmares is the right term to use. When you look, when you look at it, everything that's taking place right now is taking, you know, is taking me back to the, to the beginning of the decline of the British Empire, where they did not want America to, to have slaves, not because they all of a sudden grew a sense of morality. They just knew that the best way to cripple the growing superpower at the time, or the rising superpower at the time, which was the US, was to cripple their main source of revenue. Dark though it may sound, now if the British were successful into bringing a stop, an instant stop to slave trade, they could have literally crippled the American, the American economy, because a large part of it was heavily dependent on plantations.
Yeah. They could have also attacked the Ottomans and the other particular, Middle Eastern kingdoms that existed at that time, who were also flourishing with the slave trade.
Slave trade, yeah. They were like, nah. Where's my events? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Prosperous.
Yeah. Prosperous. Okay. Prosperous and sustainable African. At least this is what we are saying.
Yeah.
But what we are doing is stockpiling weapons. Everyone wants to be a nuclear power. And if you look at the leadership that some countries have, I would not trust that guy with a 9mm, let alone a nuke. Now, the EU in its team Europe approach, in partnership with the AU and AU member states, have made considerable progress on the delivery of global gateway Africa Europe investment package to support the common ambition of 2030. And the AU Agenda 2063, in all the 11 key policy sectors of the Africa Europe investment package. And then they go on to list a bunch of things. But, here's the thing. The question here is, in all the union that we find ourselves at, as Africans, what role are we playing that is more significant than either warming chairs, smiling for pictures, and then I'm sure there are open buffets there? Now, because what we want here is to play a role, especially one that is less political. Because like I pointed out earlier, someone will have to show me just how politics generate revenue. I'm yet to see any political party's source of revenue. That does not involve...
Sometimes them actually declaring, where they get grants and financing support.
The reasons why they're reluctant to do that is because, questionable.
Yeah.
But,
that's actually a good point, Helmut, because if you know a private sector business has customers, they have a product to offer, and they can show their auditors, who then can sort of like be a... What do they call that term? A reference, a character reference, or some sort of a reference based upon their functions. When you come to politics, it's all about smoke screens, mis and disinformation sometimes, and sometimes even just about,
firing shots at each other.
Yeah, the whole time deflecting from the true issues of society. And then they can't prove, and then they don't want to be transparent upon their personal wealth.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to do. Now, because what we are looking at here is what we keep asking for as Africans is a seat at the table. Now, what are we, you know, at this point, it's, now, at this point, we can now talk about, what are we Africans bringing to the table that we want to participate in?
Well, I'll list them. Apparently, we're going to have the most youngest population group by 2050 in the world. But that only tells me, which I thought was like a weird thing to mention, but that just tells me Africans have to go work somewhere else. Which technically describes itself as a kind of human resources trading system.
So we're back to transatlantic 2.0.
Exactly. But transatlantic legal, transatlantic connected, highly integrated and connected global financial system, and transatlantic 2.0 in terms of you can work here but not stay here.
You see, the problem with that is,
So then, once again, we are exporting something.
Yeah, we're always exporting. Because the goal that we want to achieve, if we're going to answer the question of what are we bringing to the table, is, we are going to make something to trade with the EU, and the EU will make something to trade with us.
Ah, that's not how it works, Amut.
So,
I mean, even that lady, what's her name, that was speaking there? The Callas.
The one that was chairing
the, the Callas lady from the EU. Yeah. She even mentioned critical rare earth minerals, the green energy transition and all that, because they realized they've got their real estate is too small.
Yeah.
And Africa has all this real estate. So you need to produce the things to sell to us. So we'll invest in you to sell it to us. But you don't actually own it.
Yeah, that explains why you referenced the, why you referenced the Africa Italy summit.
Yeah. We're back to that. It's squarely in that scenario. And then what did our bra, Moussa Faki say, or was it Macky Sall?
No, it was Moussa, it was Moussa Faki.
Yeah. What did he say? Yes.
You know, start backing up your talking with practical. That guy made me laugh.
And you know, what's the other thing that hit us, the Africans also. Well, technically, those other Africans was the immigration or the migration issues.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned it again.
Okay. You see, what you have here is something Trevor Noah pointed out in one of his jokes.
Mm.
That, everyone that finds themselves in the UK or France, basically in the EU zone, for example, every time they do something good, like this, you remember this video that was circulating, I think, out of France, that guy that that actually crawled the wall to go and help a child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was given French citizenship. Yeah, I mean, he became French like really fast. Then you can imagine every immigrant.
And he got a job.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
You know, every immigrant guy at that point was waiting for for a toddler to
be dangling from a window,
so they can help. That's an easy way, because before that, the only way to get citizenship was marry some take for example Rock of Ages and
the thing, Hamoud. Most of this francophone and that's what I keep explaining. The francophone countries, they do have like a guaranteed back door of becoming a French citizen. Because
if you're a soccer player, for example.
Yes. If you're Paul Pogba, if you're Kylian Mbappe, if you're, what's the other footballer's name? What was the guy's name? Tochman. The guy that was also at Real Madrid. He had the little he always had the bandage on his hand. Who also went to the Middle East. If you're all of those North African French speaking countries, from Algeria to Tunisia.
Just have talent.
Now, all those guys, except for Algeria, but all the other particular Francophone-speaking African countries, like I explained, are part of the French community. What is the French community? At the founding of the French community, literally, which is like the Commonwealth, is the French Constitution. The French Constitution gives the heads of state of Mali, of Cameroon,
and all the French,
all those Francophone speaking African countries, those guys are unelected National Assembly members in the French Parliament. Let me say that again. They are unelected members of parliament.
You see, that's the model we are running with, but we want to, you know, we don't want foreign interference.
And that's where I now also rebut or actually sort of like counter the argument that has been existing even here in an African context about the anti-colonial move, you know, the influence of Europe on African affairs, even in Namibia. And this is where you still see the very strong tethers, Helmut. The discussion has been, for example, like in that French community discussion. And I did that discussion last year here on my Sunday morning take, on a Sunday morning session. The French, under Charles de Gaulle, the French president then. Now remember, every time...
He was a general, right?
Yeah, he was the general during the Second World War. He was technically also supposedly in support of the Austrian, failed Austrian painters' policies and way of, you know, what Europe, the best vision for Europe.
All you just have to do is look at his policies, you'll understand. I mean, that will not shock you.
Yeah. So, well, a lot of them obviously included a lot of human rights abuses, a lot. Actually, most of it was underlined with some sort of a malignment or a malign attitude towards someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back on track, Charles de Gaulle, after the Second World War, when he became president of France, just before 1950, they had a new referendum of the French constitution because they amended it from pre-1900. So every time when they say the Fifth or the Sixth Republic, remember, it's every time that they amended the French constitution. Now, every time they amend the French constitution, the French communicate to all those African, French, Francophone-speaking African countries. Ask your politicians have to ask you in a referendum style, do you guys still want to be part of the French Republic? But they changed it from something to now the French community. It went, you know, like heavily colonial rhetoric to less colonial rhetoric and more like we go together in peace and collaboration.
Mm-hmm. But we still want to control your central banks.
And we still want to control your financing and your expenditure and all that.
But also we want you to be free.
Yes, but we can also arrest your politicians if we feel like they are just,
you know, going against our interests.
Splashing too much cash in Paris. So, in the 50s, most of those African countries, except for, is it Burkina Faso? And what's the guy's name? The guy that also died, that was stabbed in the back. He's the same as Lumumba, Sankara.
Thomas Sankara.
Yeah, except for Burkina Faso. Because Burkina Faso was supposedly the only country that said no. All the other guys went, yay. Maximum, you know, everyone said yes, they still want to be part of the French community and they still want to be sort of like quasi-government.
Hang on a second. I think it was Guinea under Suko Ture also said no.
Yeah. But I don't know. I can't remember which Guinea it was. Equatorial or Bissau, one of them was also a Spanish colony beforehand.
I think it was Conakry.
Conakry, which is Bissau.
No, there are two differences. They said that those are the capitals. Guinea, capital city, Bissau, Guinea-Bissau. Guinea, Conakry, capital city, Conakry.
So it's equatorial.
No, it's Guinea, Conakry.
It's equatorial, bruh.
Equatorial.
Yeah, there are three Guineas in the world. You get Papua New Guinea in the Pacific Islands. Then the other two Guineas are on the African continent.
No, in Africa there are three.
Are there three?
Uh-huh.
So there are four Guineas?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so there you go. So it's Conakry. But in that indicator, right, all the other countries, all the other African countries literally went and said yes in their referendum. They still want to be part or somehow quasi-governed by the French constitution.
Yeah.
And that was in the 50s. So if fellow Africans here are trying to sort of like say there's a new wave of some sort of resistance element going on, I am really sorry. I am really sorry. Your baby boomer parents already voted away that independence in the 50s.
Oh, seriously?
They voted it away, Helmut. They gave control to those two countries. To France.
You're not helping this party.
No, I'm not. I mean, we have to identify the reality of the realities. And then all of us go and participate, the whole of Africa go and participate in what is also going to be like a quasi, once again, you know, let's feel good for being colonized as well.
Yeah.
Commonwealth. I mean, that is an epic level of saying, this is Praskap on a new level. Yes, I used to abuse you, but now you're my friend.
I will change, you know, just give me another chance. Okay, you know what? I don't want to roast women. But look.
Helmut, that would have been a low blow.
Very low blow.
But yeah. But it is actually, it is Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's the term I was doing. Stockholm Syndrome. Falling for someone that kidnapped you.
And then the worst thing is, Namibians go to these other countries because, I mean, come on. It's one of the first things that you always identify. Like, so what was the relationship beforehand? Oh, okay. Nice. Really? Wonderful. Wonderful. I get beaten up in every other facet of governance and existence. And now I've got to be your equal. Oh, wow. So I must just forget.
Yeah, just, you know,
don't pay any heed.
Forgive. That's safe. The good book.
Yeah.
Oh, so they say.
And then also widely adopt their religion.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not our religion as well.
Well, now it's yours, you know. But let's take a commercial break before we start, cooking the big guy upstairs.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% off its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Minutes left to the hour of six, and yeah. Where are we now? I think when you look at Africa now, you see what I'm interested in is not the UK's conscription, and the UK's conscription of the military, whatever it is that they're doing there in the EU, but I'm just looking at us, as Africans. In every partnership that we are getting in, whether it's with the Russians, whether it's with the Chinese, whether it's with the Indian,
yeah.
whether it's, with the Americans or North or South Americans, the question is, what do we have as leverage in these negotiations?
Okay. Factor in as a backdrop, the South-South discussion we also had on Thursday. Yeah. So you have South-South on Thursday. You've got nuclear non-proliferation that we did on Friday.
Yeah.
Then we've got this Africa-EU discussion today.
Mm-hmm.
All of that ties in into today. And also going ahead with Donald Trump and his wackiness, and also being bribed with a golden jet and all those kinds of things.
I'm telling you, you'll think there's corruption in Africa. Nah.
Not on that.
You ain't seen nothing.
Not on an international level.
Seriously, this was openly done.
Openly. Now, remember, it's the same country that got Tshisekedi and Kagame in the same room sitting like this, like you and I sitting up opposite each other in the same room to strike out a peace deal. So now I ask you, if that on publicly, on a public level was done for Trump.
Yeah.
You know what? We're giving you automatically flushing toilet pots on your Air Force One. You can use it as a nuke. Now everyone, all national security advisors in the US are going like, but that just means that they have an avenue to spy on the US. Trump is like, I don't care. It's my personal gift. It's the foundation's gift. You know, you
got to keep.
But it's going
to
be parked at Mar-a-Lago.
You see, that's not the first time this is happening, you know, but I mean, okay, who is this? The Saudi ambassador to the UK was bribed, I think, the same way by BAE Systems with a basically flying hotel. Yeah, that was customized, I think, to his football club, American football club of his choice, the Dallas Cowboys. And the homeboy was just, well.
What? The ambassador?
Yeah, Prince Banda.
Owns a football club?
No, the private jet that was, he was quote-unquote donated to, you know, more like offered as a quote-unquote gift. Well, you know, the internal part of it was, had the colors and basically everything resembling the, you know, the guy's favorite football club.
From the U.S.?
Yeah, from the U.S.
So he was an NFL fan?
Yeah, very huge one.
An ambassador gets an...
So, you see, that's why I'm telling you guys that, for those of you that say, you know what, I cannot be bribed. No, you have not been bribed, because when this guy decides to bribe you, they are coming all hands on deck.
Yeah.
And that's like the same way I always assure you in my morning show, I can never be bribed, especially with an iPhone with 2 SIM cards. That can never be me. If you don't believe me, just try it. Now, that's, you see, the best question I'm asking myself here is,
technically there is a way, Hamoud.
There is no way.
No, there is. And you know it.
No, there is no
way.
You
just have to make sure the one bribing is a she.
Okay, now that's punching below the belt, dude. That's punching below the belt. Yeah, so...
But this doesn't mean, guys, when you see Hamoud at a public event, that you shouldn't pay.
No, please do. Now, for the love of God, you see... The question here for me is, what do we have to offer?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, geopolitical negotiations rely very heavily on leverage.
Yeah.
But
leverage is also not good, Helmut.
In what way?
Because most of the leverage that you see are for, they do have a negative connotation, or they do have a negative potential outcome. For example, let's take that Donald Trump being bribed with a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just so that he doesn't tariff Qatar and Saudi Arabia.
There you go.
He was given a personal plane. And the plane was transferred under the foundation's name. But at the same time...
So you have some legal workaround also taking place there.
At the same time, his two sons, the guys that were busy promoting the Donald Trump meme coin, the cryptocurrency, was in the same two countries. The week before, their father and the first lady flew to the U.S. So you could technically also debate or argue that potential sort of like, let me grease your palm a little bit better with the other kind of official passport that has someone else's face on it.
You see, this is not something new. This is, political world bribes has been going on for as long as mankind have been in existence. Mm. You know, the guy who is revered even to this day as the father of Russian literature, Alexander Pushkin, his grandfather or great grandfather was born in either modern day Cameroon or Ethiopia.
Mm.
He was, basically kidnapped by the Ottomans and then offered to Peter the Great as a gift, believe it or not. Now, the thing is, this is actually where you find the Eastern world very interesting, because instead of keeping him as a slave, Peter the Great put him through school. And so he rose in ranks in the legislative bodies, bodies of Russia.
Mm.
And, he was a very, he was genius. He was allowed to get married, to non-black, by the way. This is very important to point out, counter to the Jim Crow. Now, one thing
and
that...
that's before the Jim Crow.
This was long before the Jim Crow.
Yeah.
Now, after that, well, obviously he had, you know, he had kids who had kids that led to Alexander Pushkin, who now, who was, you know, a literary genius. Well, who wrote, who's basically, on par with, you know, on par, if you to use the Western equivalent of Shakespeare's.
Mm.
Now, this
but remember,
is,
Shakespeare was a playwright.
He
just helped advance English. With Pushkin them, they literally told you stories.
Yeah.
That the nobility of that time, well, let's call them sort of like the elites of that time, they didn't hear.
I mean, the writing was on a whole another level. Yeah. So, this guy, so, that's one thing that I find, you know, that's basically one thing that I find fascinating about the Eastern world is the way that they also, by the way, interact. Is it the 1400 when Yasuke, the first black man, first showed up in Japan?
Mm.
He was not, you know, everyone did not go, I mean, he has the muscles for a farm. No, they just, treated him as a human being.
Mm.
If he showed up in the East, that same time period, oh boy, were you screwed.
And the guys that took him there was obviously one of the great colonizers of
Africa. Oh yeah, it was, I think.
The Portuguese.
Yeah, Jesuit priest.
No, but it was the Portuguese. How he got there.
Oh yeah, it was the Portuguese.
Was the Portuguese.
Quote unquote explorer. And, let's go with
colonizer. And obviously
on this
he
one.
Became one of sort of like the participants in the court of Oda Nobunaga. Not that anyone in Namibia probably would know.
At the time.
But Oda Nobunaga was one of the top daimyo, because the guy that actually became shogun was, Tokugawa Ieyasu. Yeah, no, it's not. Is it easy? Ieyasu? No. Tokugawa, what was the guy's name? Tokugawa. But anyway, he was sort of like the other enemy, the other camp.
Yeah, oh yeah, they, you know, then, you know, after they looked at his size, it was like, hey, we are fighting a war here, wanna train?
No, it was a 100-year civil war, Helmut.
We'll give you a, you know, we'll give you a sword. Oh yeah, they were really kicking the heck out of each other.
The Japanese were fighting a 100-year civil war. I mean, I read the book that's about that discussion, that whole thing. Nah, I read that book 5 times, Helmut. And it was a novel, about a 1,000-page novel this time, this big. It's the book's name is actually known as Shogun, written by James Clavell. Helmut, that guy lays down the whole history of, what's the thing? What's the period's name?
Is it the Sengoku period?
Sengoku Jidai.
Yeah.
So Sengoku Jidai translates to the period of war or something of eternal war. The downside is, Helmut, it was literally 100. And it's not the first time the Japanese did that. Having 100-year civil war.
What the heck are you fighting over? But anyway, you know, that's just the Japanese being Japanese, you know,
yeah,
precise.
That's them being them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So coming back to the EU and AU summit, commitment to multilateralism. Oh dear Lord. That's another painful one. The EU and AU share a commitment to effective multilateralism and a rules-based international order. You have got to be kidding me. And, with the UN at its core, to address, with the UN at its core to address the global challenges such as peace and security, climate change and human rights. You know what that took me to? Last year's Security Council without veto power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also about the Security Council reformation that you and I also discussed.
Because this is impossible without.
Yeah. And you know what also happened in between? So, BRICS, apparently, it was China and Russia that put South Africa's name forward as being part of the Security Council.
Uh-huh.
You and I, we literally forecasted this would happen. Ethiopia and Egypt went like, hell no, we have the AU, and they were all speaking about AU, but South Africa is one of the founding members of BRICS. Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord.
It's a bumpy road ahead.
Then it goes on to say that, they recognized the need to for multilateralism, multilateral institutions to adapt to today's challenges. This very same thing was said about the reformation of the United Nations Security Council last year. And to reform and make more inclusive, transparent, accountable, particularly in regard to underrepresented regions like Africa. Now, this also becomes a very giant thorn in the eye when you look at it from financial institution standpoint. And this is where, now, for Africa to participate on this level in terms of inclusivity and, you know, and economic and political independence, France has to let loose of its colonies, and it's not gonna do that, not voluntarily. At least, you know, a central bank related.
Yeah, central, financing related.
Financing related, yeah. Because, well, first of all, I don't see that advantaging France in any way.
No, it won't. And that's also one of the particular reasons as to why it becomes tricky. Nigeria was against ECOWAS's discussion of bringing in that other, that of empowering. They wanted to change the CFA franc,
yeah,
or the CF franc to a different currency.
They want to have a common currency.
Yeah, the ECOWAS dollar.
Yeah.
But the downside of the ECOWAS dollar is that the Francophone guys were talking it between themselves, and Nigeria was against it because Nigeria has a currency.
Yeah.
Now, remember what I keep saying. A currency is a country's, one of a country's national symbols. Like your flag, your president, your national your parliament, and a currency. Those are your national symbols. Now, the ECOWAS guys have no problem with throwing away national symbols. But the Nigerians were arguing, but you guys don't have economies because your economic policy comes out of Paris.
Yeah, it comes out of Paris, yeah.
The Nigerians literally had a position to stand and defend by saying, so you guys want to have a common currency, or you want to adopt a common currency in the West African economic framework, but I've got my currency. I have my banking systems. So how are we going to integrate things? What are we going to do? And it's also one of the things that Nigeria also said, your currencies are backed up by the euro. And your economies back up the French economy.
So how the heck are we going to make decisions in our ECOWAS bloc with our common currency? Do we have to cut ties with Paris, or is Paris going to have some control in our common currency? It's like the, it's like Namibia trying to decide how EU member states adopt their financial legislations.
Or even South Africa. Let's, for example, say, because South Africa is one of the largest FDI hubs from anywhere else in the world into the economy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like South Africa now telling the UK businesses, okay, it's like South Africa's currency, the rand, is 1:1 to the UK. Ne? But when I show up with my Namibian dollar is how many times more, because we still most pegged.
Yeah.
So the Namibian dollar is also automatically now 1:1 to the British pound. But the British don't recognize the Namibian dollar, because they said, no, we recognize the rand, but we don't recognize you.
Yeah, we have no clue who you guys are.
They can still interchange with the pula, because the pula is a internationally floating currency.
Yeah.
But the Namibian dollar isn't, because of the 1:1 peg.
Yeah.
The downside is now literally in a discussion. Does it do we experience, what was that thing that the Dutch experienced?
Dutch curse.
The Dutch curse, because the Dutch curse also comes through from, if your currency is too expensive.
Yeah.
Then no one can buy your exports. So it has a negative impact on your GDP, mm-hmm, and a negative impact on the aspect supposedly of job creation and stuff like that. Because then people will see, but your country can't trade because your products are too expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, on one of those particular notes.
Okay, now here's another here's one of those just many problems that I see, you know, especially in the sphere, you know, in the spheres of politics. And that's what is said is not really, you know, is more often contradicting what's being done on the ground. Because I don't see France saying just voluntarily, just well, Africa, you know, all my former colonies, including those ones in Africa, I would just, give them the right to control their economies, right, you know, back to their central governments. Because the reason why, even after, you know, the reason why in the 50s, when a lot of African countries that are former French colonies, gained their independence is, well, the reason why they, you know, Paris kept clinging on to these colonies is because their economy is heavily dependent on them. And, this whole EU summit and partnership is a very nice congress, but the problem is I don't see Paris just waking up one morning and saying, you know what? I don't care if it crashes our economy. Unless they figure out a backup plan, which, I mean, it's since the 1950s actually goes back, but it's the reason behind the colonialism in the first place. They needed resources. They needed access to resources. Which is why you see, you know, the rise in militia groups, the rise in army generals taking over power, because democratically, it just can be done. Which is a very terrible way of, of looking at things that, democratically you can do it. The only way to do it is for until some army general takes over power and then forcefully kicks out the democratically elected guy. That's the only way it will be done. Jeez.
It's time to win your share of $500,000 in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Olio mnangeshefa noahara kushivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And coming back, dear listeners, just highlighting and stepping into the last 10 minutes of today's session of The Home Run. And obviously, the subject matter at hand, obviously, that we are busy, you know, dissecting, it has got multiple layers, which it obviously would have, because when you started also looking at some of the particular messaging that comes about from this ministerial meeting that took place on the 21st of May, you have a discussion of renewed and enhanced cooperation on peace, security, and governance. Now, the part specifically that Helmut also focused on highlighted sort of like closer economic ties, but there are already certain particular roadblocks in existence on the ground and specifically in the reality. When you come into the other particular realm of peace, security, and governance, the introduction that we also started off on in today's subject matter, highlighting firstly to you some of the serious security or global security or international security developments that are happening that should frighten many people. I mean, specifically hearing the US announcing that they will have conscription now taking place. There are developments supposedly that Russian forces are they are busy forming up on certain borders. I think it's with the Latvia, Estonia guys, or it's probably with Finland, one of the two zones in that discussion in Europe. then you've got obviously sort of like the ongoing sort of like back and forth through diplomatic channels and also in public between China and the USA, or should I rather say the USA and China, because the USA is obviously the one instigating things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's obviously a whole bunch of accusations flowing about. That context that we set up for you there feeds into this subject matter of EU-AU or AU-EU, because getting back to that one thing I highlighted last week, Helmut, to you, that one message I shared with you in terms of the funding discussion on the AU.
Yeah.
Less than 40% of AU member states, dear listeners, actually contribute to the AU. The AU has a bunch of literature on how to become financially sound and independent.
And boy, does it make sense.
It makes sense. But the AU's funders are literally the same countries that are Namibia's development partners. And literally, you get the EU, Germany. In that order. EU, Germany, China, USA. Hi.
So, look, we have a lot of, we have a lot of, how do I put this, intergovernmental organizations like SADC, you have East African Community, you have the ECOWAS, you have the newly, Sahel, the newly formed one. Although that one is specific, according to them, that one is more specific towards defense.
Yeah, it's more like a security alliance.
Security alliance. Yeah, thank you very much. Now, one thing that you see is that all these organizations like, all these organizations that we have, East African Community and SADC, and we have a bunch of them.
Mm.
They are all more very, very, very political in nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, like trading is the last thing that we talk about.
Or even just positive cooperation and integration, Helmut. I mean, look at the wonderful messaging of the AFCTA.
Oh, dear Lord.
And then ECOWAS goes and does something else.
Yeah.
Or you have, what you call it, these guys here with the Eastern DRC conflict doing something else. And then... where the headquarters of the AU is based, go falls into a civil war. What guy?
But remember, we want to participate. This is okay. This is going to be very tricky for me, especially when it comes to more like external bulldozing. And at least security-wise, we see the very same thing happening to the EU.
Yeah.
The US, especially the US, basically calls the shots. On a NATO level. And, there was a little bit of backstabbing when I think it was Australia that was supposed to buy submarines from AUKUS, France.
The AUKUS.
Yeah, the AUKUS submarines from France.
No, it's not the submarine's name.
Uh-huh.
It's known as the AUKUS deal.
The AUKUS deal.
Yeah. The UK stole an agreement between Australia and France.
And France.
Because Australia had ordered, diesel-powered, refurbished diesel-powered submarines from France to just now sort of like go talk with the British to go talk to the US and say, sell them your previously discontinued class. It's a kind of, in military terms, there's a, when it comes to naval hardware,
mm-hmm.
submarines and ships are part of certain particular classes. So what is the class?
Ohio class or something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Cause the Russians have the same, the Chinese have the same, the Germans, you name it. So there was a specific class of submarines that the US was about to discontinue. Hint, hint, military industrial complex. They were going to discontinue these submarines. And then the UK came in and said, you know what, Australia, why don't you order refurbished nuclear power subs? From the US. Through us, and then somehow, we have this renewed alliance discussion. That's why Macron went ballistic in 2022.
Oh, yeah, he went ballistic, yeah.
About the AUKUS deal. He was literally on the verge of even just saying, you know what, Putin, do your things. Hanan, just do what you have to do.
Now, this is backstabbing between EU member states. That's a big one.
The UK was never part of
the
UK.
Yeah, you know, the whole...
They had like a special relationship thing, like Norway. Is it Norway or is it Denmark? Like Norway. They're like a special relationship thing.
So because also that's after the Brexit.
Yeah, no, that's before Brexit. After Brexit, they were literally said shop, because the benefit that the UK sought from the EU was the single market participation.
Yeah,
and that London was literally sort of like the hub, was sort of like the financial market center for European financial market. But when Brexit happened, the EU went like, shop, send it back to Frankfurt, send it back to Paris, send it back to, who was the other one? Who's the other financial head? Is it Antwerp or is it Bruges? Brugge? No, Bruges, yeah. Well, one of those, but Europe has various financial hubs, cities that are financial hubs or financial market hubs.
Mm-hmm.
They had to reverse. The British were trying to hold on to that status, and the EU went like, my bro.
I mean, you guys
exited yourself here. So, please return to sender.
If found, please
return to sender. And they had to get the literally all those financial assets were repatriated back to the EU market.
All right. So looking at it, on an individual country level here on the continent of Africa, whether it's on an intergovernmental organization that any African country belongs to, newsflash, some African countries belong to more than one, like DRC is part of the East African Community and also part of SADC. Nice. But, one thing that you see here is that, all these organizations that we are founding, you have to understand, we barely contribute money to the AU. Yes. Why do we need all these intergovernmental organizations? I mean, who the heck is going to fund them? One thing we know is that when it comes to, when it comes to flashy lifestyle, we are very good at that. We are very good at that. We do, we know how to buy all the high-end cars, high-end jewelries, high-end holiday, high-end holiday destinations, high-end, education for our kids, high-end health facilities.
Oh, just remember, Hamut, you're talking about literally the 1%ers in the African continent.
Those are the 1%ers that actually could make the decision to change the country's the continent's economic direction. But I don't think they have that as a priority at this point.
They love shopping in Sandton, Johannesburg. Yeah. They love flying to Paris for New Year's, and they like being seen during the European summer holiday, which is our winter, by the way. They love being seen in Europe.
Yeah.
Do you know that in Europe, Helmut, in a place like France, you get a mandated 2-month holiday to enjoy the summer season?
Wait, what?
Yes. Richard Wolff was interviewed the other day on the on Breakthrough News. It's one of the other particular YouTube channels that I also watch. And one of the founders of Breakthrough News likes interviewing Richard Wolff. And Richard Wolff says his father is French.
Mm-hmm.
His father's French-American, and he's been to France more than 70 times in his life as a person, visiting family and obviously also just visiting other particular sites and for work as well. And Richard Wolff says, since he's an economist, he likes speaking upon the parallels that exist between European, sorry for that, guys, European economic, sort of, if we can call it like trade-offs. Remember, like medical aid, or let's say medical aid or pension is a trade-off that you either get or negotiate with your employer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other side that the employer wants is obviously your dedication, your expertise, your training, your skill sets in order to advance the economic endeavor of said employer. On the other side, in European, literally like in the France scenario, Richard Wolff mentions there that people get a mandated holiday period during the summer period, which is this time, 1 June, or let's say from middle of May to August. They get a holiday. The whole economy wordt gesê sharp, except for the other service sector aspects,
like health,
but not the whole economy. Only like certain particular things. You can get a, is it a 2-month or 2-week holiday? One of the two. I think 2 months would have been extreme, but 2 weeks, I think it's understandable. And he said something that you would not find in the US.
Yeah, because well,
in the US you can be fired for staying in the toilet too long. Do you know that?
Yeah, gave us the Amazon example last week.
Yeah,
says if that's not painful enough. 3 minutes past the hour of six, just to, you know, for me to, you know, my wrap up will be, you know, something that I just, hang on a second. It turns out, we have, okay, now, you see, on our Guineas, it turns out we have, three on the African continent. Yeah. Two of them are neighbors. We have, you know, you have, you know, you have a Guinea, you know, you have a Guinea, you know, the Republic of Guinea, and they even have, you know, different types. Now, Equatorial Guinea is because it's in the equator, hence Equatoria. Now, that's a news flash. And you have, yeah, Equatorial Guinea is where that guy that, you know, decided to almost put the adult entertainment out of business because everyone was going to his video. moving on, officially the Republic of Guinea is a coastal country in West Africa, and its borders Atlantic Ocean to the west and Guinea-Bissau to the northwest.
Is that Conakry? Reading.
Now this one is Guinea. Was that a capital city? That's how I know them. Yeah, that's Guinea Conakry. Mm. Now next up you have Guinea Bissau. Now Guinea Bissau officially also the Republic of Guinea Bissau, so that they are different from the Republic of Guinea, which is the name that Guinea Conakry decided to go with.
Right next door to them.
Yeah, a country. Now it's a country in West Africa, covering the bunch of square meters there, population, and is now it has Senegal to its north and the Guinea, you know, Guinea Conakry to its southeast. Now that's Guinea Bissau, and then somewhere in the middle of the African equator, that's where you find the guy that was overthrown by the cousin or the uncle, some kind of a, you know.
It sounded like a Saudi situation when I read that thing.
Yeah, you know.
2 years
back. Yeah, and then you have Papua New Guinea way, the, you know, the side of Australia.
Yeah.
Really? That's a lot of Guineas. So, Equatorial Guinea obtained its independence, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Officially, Republic of Equatorial Guinea is a country on the west, coast of Africa, of Central Africa. You know, in the same line with the self-proclaimed emperor.
Oh, so now I get why they call it Guinea-Bissau.
Yeah.
Because of the capital. Like you also said, the Guinea-Conakry.
Yeah, the capital city.
Yeah, so you identify them, which is the same thing we do with the Congos.
Congo-Kinshasa and Congo-Brazzaville.
But we know that if you say just Congo, you have to say Brazzaville, because the other one is known as DRC.
DRC, yeah.
And we, for colloquial terms, we keep using DRC.
DRC, to split the two.
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting things, eh?
Oh, yeah, it is.
And they speak Portuguese in Guinea-Bissau.
Huh?
Yeah.
Not French?
No.
Really? So the French one is the Conakry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one is the one for Sukotore, the one that, you know, the Sukotore, the guy that also said no to signing the agreement for that, literally said the continuation of colonialism. And, you know, the French intelligence was like, you know, we have Operation Pestle, aka dry cleaning agent, best on the market. And they just, well, caused a bunch of chaos there, but that's a story for another day. We come to the end of our show for today. Oh, no. Now, those guys are very good at it. You have to give them credit for that.
Yeah.
7 minutes past the hour of six. So that brings us to the end of the Monday afternoon home run show. So I'm going to just leave with a question. Whatever that we are participating in, every agreement that we get into, I don't care with who as a continent, you know, like on an AU level. What are we bringing to the table is a question that we have to ask ourselves before we start asking for, you know, economic or any type of independence. Because if we are not, you can't get in an agreement with a trading bloc without figuring out what you are going to trade. I know extractive industry is not going to cut it.
Or to be someone's, or sort of like be the second rate partner in the discussion. Helmut, for us to end on this particular note.
Yeah.
Europe will actually try to position us a lot more in their particular economic direction. I mean, they keep referencing we are the labor of the future. Why are you referencing we have the labor of the future? So you're technically telling us, don't develop yourselves so that your labor work for you.
Yep.
You must export skilled people to our countries.
Yeah, there is a more of a tug of war going on, which is, every union that we get into as a, on a continental level at this point is obviously going to be, it will be very difficult to, to separate it from the tug of war going on between a lot of global powers, including India, China, Russia, the EU and the, both Americas when it comes to sort of like being on the right side of the African continent because of the two things that were also mentioned in that discussion. And that is, we have the youngest population, so the future workforce is in Africa. Again, this is something that a lot of economists, if anyone listened to them, told them back in 2000. Now, the next thing is obviously the rare earth minerals. A lot of developed countries, they need their technology to maintain their infrastructures, especially the financial one.
Mm.
You need computer chips for you to fly, for your jets, for your cars, for your literal computers, for your smartphones and everything. Now, you can't make that if you don't have access to rare earth metals, something that Africa has.
Yeah.
So whoever is partners with Africa is going to have a booming technological future and therefore control, basically be the next empire.
Mm.
So again, at this point, we have something to offer and we are shipping it out. So, well, there's another pain in the behind. Oh, yeah.
Life is fun, eh?
Oh, yeah, it is fun.
Life is fun. On that note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company. Stay tuned for the business and economic segment to follow on after the break. And stay in, connected to our particular sort of like social media platforms, as well as also seeing you tomorrow, same time, same place here on The Home Run.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flace. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right.
Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Olium Nangeshifa, Noahara Kushivifa Oma Kuroyo Kupitira Mohorike Radio Station Oyo Eagle FM. Enya Mukuro Olongaha. Ningi kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono rahitatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa kono rahitatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge dumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.